Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. 2016 has been full of breaking news on the health front. The Zika virus was a top subject on the global health agenda as the mosquito-borne illness caused an epidemic in some countries in the Americas and the Caribbean. The World Health Organization declared recently that Zika no longer represented a public health emergency. In addition, HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, non-neglected tropical diseases, and other health issues and sicknesses were also on the agenda. On the polio subject, there was a drawback in Africa when, after 2 years being polio-free, Nigeria saw an outbreak, two cases of polio. And then earlier this year, the WHO declared the Ebola outbreak over. And just recently, well, a new vaccine to protect against Ebola was proven to be 100% effective in a major study in Guinea. We will look at some highlights of this year's health news and to help us understand what has happened and the way forward, we are joined by our expert, our guest today via phone from Maryland outside Washington, D.C. It is Professor Lawrence Gustin. He is faculty director of the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law with Georgetown University and director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center on Public Health Law and Human Rights. Professor Gustin, welcome to Health Chat.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We are very, very happy to have you with us to go over some of the news stories of 2016. So do stick around. Remind our listeners that you can always connect with us on the internet or send us your email at healthchat@voanews.com. And if you have any questions, we can toss them to Professor Gustin to attempt to answer them. We will discuss some of the stories that were significant this year in a moment with Professor Gustin. But first, here is a wrap-up by VOA's Carol Pearson.
Zika is such a mild illness that most people don't know they have it. But in the past 2 years, a surge of babies born with extremely small heads showed the world that Zika is anything but harmless. The virus originated in Uganda more than 60 years ago. It recently emerged in Brazil, then surged north to Florida, and possibly to Texas. Dr. Anthony Costello with the World Health Organization said even one affected child has a very big impact on the community and a family's ability to cope.
It's a public health problem of huge concern for the world. 69 countries have seen Zika virus emerge in the last 2 years. We're talking about a virus that causes brain damage and potentially lifelong disability, which is a huge blow to families.
Right now, doctors can only advise women not to travel to areas where the virus is spreading, to avoid mosquito bites, or to delay pregnancy. There's no vaccine against Zika, but one could be available in 2018. In Nigeria, the polio virus reemerged in the violence-racked northern part of the country, where it's hard to make sure every child gets vaccinated. Three children were diagnosed with the disease just when Nigeria was thought to be close to becoming polio-free. The virus also exists in another conflict zone, along the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Those behind the effort say they are determined to eliminate the disease. Polio cases have decreased by over 99% since 1988, from about 350,000 cases then to less than three dozen in 2016. At the beginning of December, the National Institutes of Health announced the start of a major trial of an experimental vaccine against the AIDS virus.
An HIV vaccine is not going to be easy. We may not even know if we're going to get a vaccine.
Fauci described the advances in AIDS treatment as nothing short of spectacular.
Today, the combinations of therapies we have for individuals, if someone's in their 20s and gets infected and comes in and gets on a combination of drugs, you could predict that they would live an additional 50 years, 50. That is one of the most extraordinary advances in the transition from basic research to an applicable intervention in any field of medicine.
If an effective vaccine can be found, it could finally mean the end for a virus that has infected more than 70 million people and killed 35 million people over the past half century. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Again, Professor Gustin, thank you so much for joining us. Let me have your reaction on the report we just heard, and I would like to start with Zika, where the WHO declared that Zika no longer represents a public health emergency. Where do we stand, really, according to the WHO standards? We shouldn't be afraid of Zika anymore? Am I accurate? Is that the way to understand this?
No, I don't think it is the way to understand it. I think that the World Health Organization has made very clear that Zika continues to be a very serious global problem, but it did call off the public health emergency, which is really a technical legal declaration under the international health regulations. But Zika still remains a very significant threat. And I do worry that WHO's calling off the emergency might make people feel that that everything's all right when it isn't. We're now going into the Southern Hemisphere's summer months, so we could get a rise in mosquito-borne illness, in particular Zika. In Latin America, it could one day appear with greater force in Africa. We've got circulating Zika virus in Singapore. It could emerge further in South Asia. So this is no time to be complacent.
So when we talk about public health emergencies, in the case of the Zika virus, is it somewhere that it is a local emergency, or it is an emergency when it has a global repercussion or implication?
Well, according to the International Health Regulations, which is an international treaty that virtually every country in the world has signed up to, it's got to have global dimensions. It's got to be a novel virus, and it has to have global dimensions, so that it's really something that's supposed to be an international instrument, not just national, even though it could be a big emergency from a country's point of view.
So when you say that you don't really agree with removing the public emergency warning, if I can use that term, is the main reason complacency, or the fact that there might be less attention put on Zika, less resources, and people, you know, might just get infected because of lack of awareness?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think when the World Health Organization says it's calling off the emergency, it sends a signal to people that, oh, well, you don't really need to take aggressive precautions against mosquito bites. You don't really need to invest in Zika vaccines or treatment. You don't really need to do aggressive mosquito control on the ground, and all these things are very, very, they're complacent, and they will let this epidemic rage on. This is not the time to go slow. It's the time to speed up.
So in addition to speeding up, what else would you suggest that should be done?
Well, I think that there are many things to be done. I think we need to invest as an international community in very significant mosquito control, because, you know, most people don't realize that that the greatest killer of humankind is the mosquito. And it's not just Zika. It's Zika, malaria, dengue, chikungunya, yellow fever. All of these diseases are transmitted by mosquitoes, and we need to do a lot better job controlling the mosquito population. We need to do public health education, and we also need research and development for vaccines and treatments.
In the case of the, you speak about mosquito-borne illnesses, malaria being one of them, in the case of the United States, this country was able to control malaria at some point. But then malaria is still so prevalent in Africa. So if you were to give us your take on the issue of malaria on the continent of Africa, what do you think is lacking, or where do you think we should emphasize or step up in order to be able to control this disease?
Well, there are many things to do. I mean, first of all, the fact that the United States and other developed countries that they've been able to eliminate malaria means that it can be done. And what we need to do is spend the money and the resources and the dedication to do it in sub-Saharan Africa. This involves very substantial mosquito control efforts. It involves public education so that there aren't any habitat like standing water and pools of water for or abandoned tires or things like that where mosquitoes can breed. It means even using techniques like transgenic mosquitoes to try to reduce the mosquito population. It means more insecticide-laced bed nets, more public health education. It's really should be an all-out war on the mosquito, as far as I'm concerned. And malaria, of course, is one of the main health hazards that mosquitoes bring.
Absolutely. Now, let me turn to another topic that was on the agenda and recently actually made news. It's Ebola. Yes. Earlier this year, Ebola was, removed from the WHO declared the end of the epidemic of Ebola. And then recently, not even a week ago, this vaccine is the result for the trial comes out that it's 100% effective. What is your reaction?
Well, my reaction, of course, is that that's marvelous. Remember, we just talked about malaria, and we said that, we can defeat malaria, and we've done it in the United States and other developed countries. Well, we can defeat Ebola, and we've proven that. I mean, Ebola is just a very, very, sad case with hopefully a happy ending. The world just sat there and watched as an unconscionable epidemic raged in three of the poorest countries in the world in West Africa. We did nothing, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at one point said that Ebola was spreading exponentially and that we could have 1.2 million cases. So that was the classic example of global failure, the failure to build health systems in sub-Saharan Africa, the failure of the World Health Organization in providing leadership, the failure of higher-income countries to really commit the funding that was needed. And it was just a classic case of, blind ignorance and just, well, it's happening over there, we don't care. Mm-hmm. So that shows that's the worst of things. And then once we did try to engage, we were able to bring Ebola under control. That shows you what we can do. And now we have a vaccine for one of the strains of Ebola that's completely effective. So it shows you the best of the world and the worst of the world.
Interesting. And we will continue this discussion, Professor Gostin. We have to take a short break for the news, and when we come back, we have more to discuss. So don't go away. We'll be right back. It's now time for the news with Sanusi Diallo.
Final test result confirm an experimental Ebola vaccine is highly effective. a major milestone that could help prevent the spread of outbreaks like the one that killed thousands in West Africa. Scientists have struggled to develop an Ebola vaccine over the year, and this is the first one proven to work. Efforts were ramped up after the infectious disease caused a major outbreak, beginning in 2013 in Guinea and spread out to Liberia and Sierra Leone. About 11,300 people died. The World Health Organization led the study of the vaccine, which was developed by the Canadian government and is now licensed to the U.S.-based Merck & Co. Results were published Thursday. New research suggests pregnancy changes women's brain structure in a way that potentially helps prepare them for motherhood. Researchers tracked 25 first-time mothers in Europe over the course of 5 years, as well as a group of women who never conceived. Looking for the potential changes in gray matter, the tissue that makes up the central nervous system. Changes occur in areas of the brain involved in the social interaction used for attributing thought and feelings to other people. The researchers say this will help mothers become more attached to their baby, among other things. The structural brain changes lasted for at least 2 years, and the researcher found no evidence of women's memory deteriorating. Finally, in another research, a doctor in the Netherlands claimed a new treatment could offer life-changing pain relief to thousands of people who suffer from arthritis. The treatment comes in the form of a tiny electrical implant which is embedded under the skin. The implant rests against the nerve in the neck, firing electrical impulse once a day for 3 minutes. The researchers say that's enough to reduce the activities of the spleen, which regulates the immune system. They say within days, the organ produces fewer chemical and immune system, which cause the inflammation in the joint of people with arthritis. In some patients, swelling completely disappear. And that's the wrap-up of the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are looking at some health stories that were on the news in 2016. And joining us via phone from Maryland outside Washington, D.C., is Professor Lawrence Gostin, Faculty Director of the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law with Georgetown University. And Professor Gostin, before the break, you were talking about Ebola and giving us your thoughts on the Ebola vaccine. Now, when we look at where we were with the Ebola outbreak and with this new Ebola vaccine, is it the end of an Ebola outbreak as we witnessed, do you think, in West Africa? Because you mentioned it's just for one strain of Ebola. What does this mean?
Well, I think, you know, we have brought the West African epidemic under control, but we've had dozens of outbreaks throughout Africa. And what we have been able to do in most of them, in fact, virtually all except for the West African outbreak, is bring it under control very rapidly. This vaccine will give us another tool to do that, because as soon as we see an outbreak, if it's of a strain that this vaccine is used for, we can do what scientists call ring vaccination, just vaccinate contacts and those in the vicinity. And we should be able to do a much better job going forward, keeping Ebola outbreaks from raging out of control, as they did so horribly and tragically in three West African countries.
We sure hope not to see that kind of outbreak anymore, that's for sure.
No, that was just tragic.
Yes, yes. So now let's turn to a different topic, which is HIV/AIDS. December 1st was World AIDS Day, and this year looked at prevention, especially among adolescent girls and women. Now, HIV was officially identified in the 80s. We've come a long way in terms of prevention, treatment, care, and also preventing people from dying the way it used to be. Where, as of 2016, as the year end, right, what do you say about where we are with regards to HIV/AIDS, because still a lot of people are get infected. Some people still die from the disease. Where do we stand? And to your opinion, what are we missing? What are we still missing?
Yes, those are all really good questions. We are missing a lot. We've gained a lot and we're missing a lot. I mean, of course, what we've gained are miraculous treatments, something that, you know, we couldn't have even dreamed about at the height of the African AIDS epidemic. We had a disease that was devastating the young, the productive young people in Africa. Now we have treatments that can keep them alive, vigorous, in the workforce as mothers, fathers, teachers, doctors. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we also have new treatments on the horizon that will make it much easier to take medication. So that, you know, that's all the good news, and it's wonderful news, and it's really a, you know, it's a great miracle of science. But on the other hand, there's so much still to do. AIDS is not even close to being over. Young people continue to become infected. Women are, you know, still at vulnerable and at great risk in particular. We also see that even though we have more than 10 million people on antiretroviral treatment in sub-Saharan Africa, we've got many, many millions more that are not on treatment or are undiagnosed. So we need to do a lot better job with prevention, particularly among young people. We need to do a lot better job with testing and screening so that people are quickly diagnosed. We need to do a better job of getting them, everybody, on treatment rapidly. And those are the key things. And, of course, we have new tools. We have something called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, which for high-risk individuals they can take that can really reduce the risk of transmission. And people who have HIV and are under treatment, and if they're under effective treatment, they really pose very little up to zero risk to their sexual and other partners. So that, you know, there's much, you know, much gained, but much to do. And there's only so many resources, unfortunately. You know, the Global Fund, PEPFAR, other big AIDS donors, they've given a lot, but the money has plateaued, mm-hmm. and we don't really know where it's going to go. We've got a new American president. We don't know what he's going to do with PEPFAR. So there's a lot of uncertainty and still a great deal of worry, and we still don't have an AIDS vaccine.
Yes, AIDS vaccine, that's the big question, the million-dollar question, if I could say that, that has been around for many, many, many years.
Yeah, it's been a continual disappointment. I think it's this retrovirus has, you know, been a lot harder to deal with than any of us ever thought would be.
But is there any hope at all with regards to that vaccine?
Yes, I mean, I think there's hope. You know, we've got experimental vaccines going forward, but I don't really think we ought to give your listeners false hope. You know, I don't see some dramatic breakthrough, you know, very, very soon. But scientists are working on it. They're making good progress. Mm-hmm. There are a number of, you know, potentially good candidate vaccines. So all hope is not gone, but the last thing we want to do is just give another false hope, because there's been so many trials, so many candidate vaccines, and so far we've just not done very well, unfortunately. The virus has outsmarted us.
Yes. We hope for the best, that's for sure. Now, let's turn to non-communicable diseases. I wanted us to touch on that because, I mean, there have been a report not even long ago that says that there is an increase okay, of non-communicable diseases globally, especially with issues like cancer and obesity. When it comes to obesity in particular, what is the problem? Are people changing their lifestyles? Especially when I look at Africa being in the statistic, one region where obesity is increasing, I have to say I'm a bit surprised. What is happening?
Well, I can tell you what's happening. We're having what we're calling an epidemiological transition from infectious to non-infectious diseases. And so, you know, the global burden of non-communicable diseases, something like 60 to 65% of that burden is in low and middle income countries, including Africa. And Africa suffers from a dual burden of both infectious disease and non-communicable diseases. And what you see in many countries is both overnutrition, that is obesity, and undernutrition. So you've got all of these different hazards going on simultaneously. Traditional diets are being replaced by fast food, you know, sugar, fat, high-calorie foods, and that's really posing a risk. So if you think of, you know, the traditional African diet and physical activity, it's been one that's really been ideal for preventing of non-communicable diseases, but not anymore. Those diets, that physical activity pattern, those are beginning to change, and so the risks are going up. And of course, also in Africa, you have underdiagnosis. You know, when women get breast cancer or other cancers, they're not being diagnosed, they're not being treated, and so they're not catching it early. So we're having a big problem with cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and of course, tobacco-related respiratory diseases.
So then, if we want to end on a positive note, looking forward to 2017, where do you think we will see some, at least we hope to see, some major positive development? We've seen a few this year, although we saw a drawback with the polio outbreak. But if we want to look at, if we want to be optimistic, what do you hope we will see in 2017?
Well, you know, if you look at the UN Millennium Development Goals, and that we've met many of the health targets, so we've really done extraordinarily well. We've got lower child and maternal mortality. We've got more people on antiretrovirals for AIDS. We're making inroads into malaria and tuberculosis. The UN has called for a big fight against non-communicable diseases. Let me end by this. There is one major solution for many of the problems of health problems in Africa, and we know what that is, and that is strengthening health systems and having universal health coverage throughout the continent, with primary care, community care workers, clinics, hospitals, laboratories, surveillance. These are things that we can do, but what we need to do is to hold accountable our leaders. Mm-hmm. We need to hold accountable African heads of state mm-hmm. to actually abide by the Abuja Declaration and begin to invest in their own health systems. Okay. And we need the international community to really step up and fill the capacity gaps. That would bring a wonderful new year for us.
Oh, we hope for a wonderful new year, and we wish you a happy new year, Professor Goldstein.
And thank happy you. New year to you.
Thank
and all
you
your
so
listeners.
Much for joining us.
Sure.
And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. We are on our last broadcast for 2016. We wish you a happy and healthy new year to come, 2017. And thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Sanusi Diallo with the news. Until next year, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.